Get Pucked.
Hello, welcome into the Get Pucked podcast. I'm Dave, that's Matt, that's Vito. Let's get started. Big win for the Canadians, 6-3 over the Nashville Predators. What I want from you guys, I don't want you guys to recap, I don't want anything. I just want you guys to give me one positive and one negative about the game. Could be anything. It could be a player, could be a play, could be the coaching schemes. Give me one positive, one negative each. Matt, you go first.
Oh, man. I mean, well, first and foremost, I guess the positive is the win, clearly. I mean, and in such a decisive factor. I mean, it was, you know, 5-1 pretty much right towards the tail end of the third period before Duchesne started going nuts and doing a one-man show. So the win, the coming together, the team looking like a full energy, full effort, you know, I think that to me was probably the biggest takeaway that I saw from that game. A negative to me would probably be the coaching staff's treatment of a certain young defenseman. I don't particularly agree with the way that they are playing him in his minutes, Norlander, to be specific. And I don't like how they are continuing with this motif of when a young player makes a mistake, it seems like his ass is glued to the bench. He misses turns. He's got to sit there and watch how it's done. And I really, really disagree with that. But that's a small part in the bigger picture. Overall, I think the takeaway was it was a very good game for the Canadians.
Matt, would you rather see Norlander back in Sweden if he continues this type of ice time? Or would you rather just, you know, him work his way out of
I want him to stay here. I think the kid shows a lot of potential. I want the coaching staff to get their heads out their asses and play him properly. Understand what you have. You have a very offensive minded defenseman and you want to let him go. If you got to pair him with a more stay at home defenseman to negate it, if you want to pair him with more defensive, perhaps minded forwards, you do what you got to do. But you got to let these players flourish. You got to let them use the skill sets that they're available for. That's the type of player he is. You know, when he's out there, things happen. And I would the Canadians are desperate. They're starved for a defenseman like this. So, no, I don't want to see him back there. I think this kid can definitely make it on a six-man defensive squad in Montreal.
All right, Vito.
So there was a lot of action. That was fun. I mean, we got to see some fighting. You saw the team was really engaged. Obviously, them scoring as many goals as they did, you saw that they were happy. I would say Josh Anderson was hungry that game. Between the fight, between that sweet pass to Dvorak, you know, he was on fire that night, and you saw it. Now, the negative, I would say, I'm going to bring up two. The fact that they let three goals go in and you kind of got that, oh God, is the collapse about to happen? Okay, that was a bit nerve-wracking. And, I mean, Montreal scored six goals and Suzuki didn't hit the scoreboard. Now, he was very strong in the faceoff circle at 72%, but I was still a little, you know, hopeful that he could get at least an assist, but that's just a minor negative. I would say it's more the potential Nashville comeback in that game. I'll add another positive is we had a strong second period. Something we don't hear often this season. Montreal had a strong second period.
All I heard is Vito hates Nick Suzuki. That's all I heard.
I love Nick Suzuki.
That's all I heard from that whole thing.
I don't see a Nick Suzuki jersey framed on the wall.
Yeah.
Well, you think I'm going to take Carey Price down for Nick Suzuki? Not yet.
Someday, maybe.
Maybe never. Maybe not.
So Nick Suzuki, speaking of, I believe he only has points in 9 games this year. He has a lot of points, but they're like very centered into 9 games. He has like 2 3-point games. He has a bunch of 2-point games. Does that concern you a little bit that he's held off the score sheet so much in this season so far?
No, it doesn't concern me, man. I mean, come on. He's the leading scorer on the team. We're gonna bust his ass because on a 6-3 rout of the Preds, he didn't touch the score sheet. Like, he can have a night off when the team when the team is playing like
it's
that.
Been a couple of nights off, Matt.
It's not well, but he went on a massive stretch of points in however many games, 5 or 6 games straight. So if he goes a couple, 1 or 2 games without them, it's not the end of the world as long as the rest of the team is there to pick it up, right? That's the whole point of it. This team doesn't have a Connor McDavid, doesn't have a Dreisaitl, you know, doesn't even have Matthews, none of these type of players. They're a team by committee. And as long as the team is there, I don't mind that our best player has one or two games where he's not putting in tons of points. It doesn't concern me even.
This team by committee is struggling this year. I mean, yes,
well, that's a different story.
But let's not let it blind us by the rest of the season. The rest of the season, the way it's gone down, there's no
I
team
agree.
By committee.
No, but that's how they're constructed right now. Whether the committee is actually doing
the
it or not,
the most excitement
is another
story. We've seen from them is Nashville game and today's practice.
The sticks clapping.
The sticks, because Pezzetta, whatever game they were playing, that was the most excitement that we saw from them all season long.
Yeah.
All right. So just a quick note, the Canadians changed their entrance music back to Fix You after a brief flirtation
with
Rage Against the Machine's Bull and Parades. Parades
Bulls,
on Bulls.
Bulls, on, Bulls on Parades.
Bulls on Parades. See, I'm not a music guy, okay? So for me... Yeah. When I was at the Bell Center and they first came out of that song, I'm like, well, what the heck is this? And not that I liked Fix You, but I didn't even know. It just sounded like generic music. I don't think it worked really well. It didn't pump anybody up, you know, and it didn't really work with Michelle Lacroix's beautiful cadence compared to Fix You. Fix You is perfect. And the beat hits right out when he says it.
Yep.
What do you guys think? Apparently it was a Joel Edmondson request. The team requested it through Joel Edmondson. Joel Edmondson sent a text to the team saying, boys, it's done. We got it back.
I mean,
how much stock do you put in it? And were you guys a fan of Fix You? Or do you think it's time for a change?
It was one of those things I didn't know I'd miss until it was gone. You know what I mean?
Right.
I think that's how it hit me. I know a lot of fans, the moment that the first game there at home and they played Bulls on Parade when it came out, everybody's like, what the hell is this? Where's Fix You? What's going on? And okay, I mean, listen, Bulls on Parade, Rage Against the Machine, I happen to be a fan, and yeah, it gets you jacked up, right? It was exciting. But for whatever reason, sports is very superstitious. It just didn't work. It didn't pump this group up. And the whole thing with Edmondson, you know, he's out there. He's not playing right now. He had his thing, his personal things, and now he's coming back slowly, and there was a bit of an injury there. And like, to just still do this thing. You know, there's probably chatter amongst the team. Whatever the case was, he took it and he made it his own mission. And that text where he sent it, I think Gallagher said something like he said, it's done or whatever. Like just all cryptic, it's done. And then the next game, it's Fix You or whatever. I think that's fantastic. It gives the team something to rally about. Even if it's stupid, even if it's about an entrance song. I mean, it's just one of those things. It's the oddest things can be a catalyst to spark change. And this could have been it. So I'm incredibly happy that they went back.
If you go back to the last few years, Fix You has been playing at the beginning of every game. And some of the young kids that came into the team either were a part of it or they actually got to watch some tape and watch some videos, and Fix You was a part of whatever memorable moments, whatever highs the Montreal Canadiens have had. And they want to be a part of it. They want that to be part of their thing too. So them coming out to Bulls on Parade, a lot of those players... The young ones, I'd be surprised if they're really into listening to Rage Against the Machine. Yeah, I was a fan. I mean, I still like Rage, but I don't listen to them. Fix You, something about it. There's something about that song, and I'm not saying I'm a Coldplay fan. But
so you think the team is Coldplay fan? Is that it?
No,
you want Coldplay back?
There's so many highs with that song in the past. I mean, the Montreal Canadiens, it has that. Kind of that, like that thing, that song to it, that has something to it that just gets you kind of up and gives you these jitters. Even as fans, when you're listening to the song, as Michelle Lacroix is saying, that's the perfect thing that Dave mentioned. It's the way Michelle Lacroix says it, and that song and that whole tune is playing in the background. And he's saying it kind of does pump you up, and you see the fans. I mean, there was a video clip that somebody had put up on Twitter, and it was during a playoff game, and they had Fix You playing, and all the towels. Spinning.
Okay, but that's a playoff game. That's playoff atmosphere.
Yes, I understand, but certain players, Brendan Gallagher has been part of those moments. Carey Price has been part of those moments. The other players that came in after the fact want to be part of those moments because that's what they used to see. So I know it's just a song, but it's like you said, sometimes the littlest of things can spark something. Now for the players to come up, and whether it's through Joel Edmondson or what, for them to say, you guys got to put back Fix You, it means there's something there. It means something to the team.
It means that they're a bottom-feeding team right now, and they're, like, blaming it on the song. I mean, it is a bit of a cop-out, but shit, if it works, it works, you know?
They're
like,
not blaming it on this. They just, you know what I mean? I'm not saying they're blaming it on that, but they went to it. And you know what? It's not only Joel Edmondson. Fans were even saying it. We were all noticing. Why the heck? When I went to the game, it's like, Why am I listening to Bulls on Parade for him to come on the ice? Put Bulls on Parade during the game. A fight breaks out, put Bulls on Parade. You want to pump up a team? I mean, they play Metallica every freaking night. And we're all for it. I mean, For Whom the Bell Tolls plays every game.
Yep.
Right? All right. Play it during the game. Not during the moment where you're trying to pump them up.
All right. We'll have to one day figure out who's the person responsible for changing it to Bulls on Parade.
Fire him.
Fire.
Or her.
That's an investigation for another day. All right, so let's go get back to the game a little bit. You spoke about Matthias Norlander. I guess we'll now go with Cole Caufield and Dominik Ducharme after the Pittsburgh Penguin game, where he had that massively good shift. It was an impressive shift and score. Nothing came of it, but he looked good, dangled a few players. He was asked the question, I think, the following day, like, "What do you think? What do you think of Cole Caufield since he's been back up?" And I think he said something along the lines of, "Well, it's been like." Since the beginning of the season, we like him with the puck, and that's about it. And he cut his answer short, kind of insinuating maybe that there's a lot left to be desired with his play without the puck. So I just want to get...
No, I was going to say, if they're insinuating that, then why'd you sign Hoffman? I mean, Hoffman's defense isn't the best part of his game. Some players are offensive players. Let them be the offensive players that they are. I'm not saying don't play defense at all, because then you're missing your assignments there. But it doesn't have to be a strong point. There's other players that could make up for the lack of defense. The guy's brought there to score goals, be a bit dynamic, be a power play threat, be offensive. Then let him do that. If you keep trying to make players into two-way players all the time, you're gonna always have two-way players, and you're gonna suffocate the talent and the skill level that some certain players have. The entertainment value will also suffer. I mean, it's great to have a bunch of Danos, but it's a bunch of Danos.
Matt, you're shaking your head. You think Vito's an idiot? What's going on?
No. I mean, well, listen, that's a side thing we can talk about another time there. But in this particular case, no, he's not wrong. I think Ducharme's outlook is very much same old with the coaching staff that we've had here for 20 plus years at this point, which is everybody needs to be defensively sort of sound and responsible is probably the best word. They need to always be able to cover, back check, be there. And yes, I think when you start putting in things that don't come naturally to completely gifted offensive dynamos, you're going to make them suffer in what they do because they want to make sure they're doing what they're being told to do correctly. So it's the same thing with Norlander, like I said before. It's the same thing with Caufield. These guys are designed, they're prototypes to be offensive. You should harness it. You should build around it. You should work with it. You should have these guys on your first power play. How neither of them are there is just completely mind-blowing. And you got to let these guys go. And if they make mistakes, quote-unquote mistakes, by missing a defensive assignment or not getting back in time, you shouldn't penalize them. Because this is a team that does normally star for goals. You know, the 6-3 game the other day is an anomaly. It's like they either win like by these weird numbers or like they can't string more than a goal or two a game. You got to let these guys play. So I mean, I understand you want him to build up a bit and he's still learning, and he's still developing. That's another important thing. The both of them are still developing. You want to teach them certain good habits to have, but you cannot stifle the offensive creativity by insisting that they come back and continue to play defensively. So I personally don't care about how he isn't well with the puck or not up to their standards. I care how he is with the puck. And to me, that needs to be worked on. That needs to be continued to be worked on because that's his bread and butter.
Right. And today, Marc Bergevin, he was speaking on the radio. He said that Cole Caufield, they're going to evaluate him in the next few games. And there's a possibility that he goes back to Laval. What are your take on that? Would you like to see him back? Well, obviously, I don't think anybody wants to see him back in Laval. But are you okay, or do you think it'd be a huge mistake? Because
At this point, it's a huge mistake.
Yeah.
Okay. At this point, it's a huge mistake. You can't yo-yo the kid. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
You got to give him a couple games. You got to let him go a bit of time to at least give you the flashes that you saw in the playoffs.
Okay.
You can't just bring them up for three games.
If they start to string another four-game losing streak and they go on that, you send him down?
I'd go longer than four games. I would probably go like three 4 weeks. Get all those games in. Get it towards near the Christmas, and then you can start talking about shit. The team really is in the dumps. He for some reason is not finding the back of the net. There's something up there. then you can send him down, let him get his mojo back up. But I mean, he went down and it took a game or two, and then he started lighting the lamp. He started getting some stuff.
Which
he started
I think
doing
they
well.
Should have left him there a little longer.
Yeah, and that's my point. Leave him and let him do the time that he's got to do there. And then when he's confident and he's put up 20 plus goals in however many games, you bring him up, fine. But if you put him down there, like we all talked about in that episode a little while back, we're like, how long does he stay? What should they do? They left him down there 6 games. They yanked him right back up. You're like, okay, he put in 3 goals. Let's go, baby. And then you're holding him back with this whole, oh, we don't like how he is defensively and blah, blah, blah. Like, it makes no sense to me, man. I think that'd be nuts if they send him back down.
I think there's pros and cons. I mean, I would have left him in Laval for at least a few more games. He was starting to heat up. Let him fully get his confidence. Don't be like, oh, there's look at that. He's starting to pick it up. Okay, let's bring him. Because you know what? This is where his confidence is peaking. They should have just left him there. But now that they brought him there and brought him back, I can see, like, if you just send him down now, you're just shitting all over the kid. I get it. But at the same time, if he's struggling in the NHL, but he was starting to succeed in the AHL, it means, okay, he can do it at the AHL level. And I know you're going to say that, you know, he did it at the NHL level. It's different now. We spoke about this in a previous episode. People are watching him now.
But hold on a second, man. Define struggling for a second. Struggling because he looks out of place, or struggling because he can't score a goal? You know what I mean?
He's not dominating or producing at the same pace or at the same rate. You could see that. And he's the type of guy that when he doesn't produce, he's going to start getting frustrated. I'm not saying he's not doing good things out there. He is. I am a strong believer that, and we all agree on some points when it comes to this, Montreal has often rushed their kids, and they don't need to rush him. They don't need to rush him. This need to rush during a season. Tell me you have him up and the team is winning and successful right now. You'd say like, okay, I want him around this environment. He's going to learn something. He's going to be around it. It's positive. It's fine. He can make mistakes. Where it's a team that, one, you can't make mistakes. Every time you make mistakes, you're pretty much nailed to the bench. And then, secondly, it's not, they won one game, okay, it feels good. Let's see what happens. Maybe they can build off it.
But well, he was in the Pittsburgh game too, wasn't he? Mm-hmm. So I mean, he was there for a 6-0 shellacking also.
So, Matt, right. do you like what you see from him right now, or do you like?
I do.
Other than the production.
I know, but and that was to my point when we were making that little faux argument from before about whether we should send him down or not. I do. I like what I see. I think when he's out there, he's one of the only ones that actually tries to bring the puck in instead of just dumping it in and going. I mean, he makes those entries. I mean, he's when he's actually playing the positions that he needs to be, you see he's ready and geared up and ready to unleash, and he's finding those spots. I like how he's going to the net. I like how creative he's showing. He's got these flashes of even some playmaking out there that's really fantastic. I think the problem is twofold. I think perhaps there's chemistry things. You got to move him with a different centerman perhaps, or get a different winger out there, a little mixture. You definitely got to put him on your top power play unit. Because that is a sure fashion way for him to get some goals and feel better about himself and really start getting it flowing. His utilization on the power play on this team is actually like, once my head wants to explode. And then you gotta not put the reins on the kid. I mean, you can see that he's overthinking, because he's probably being drilled day in and day out from the coaches. Don't make a mistake. Be defensive minded. Worry about your positioning. If they just let him go, I promise you, you'd be seeing goals. So I like what I'm seeing. I think they're going to come. I think inevitably he's just going to say fuck it, and he's going to start going. He's going to start producing, and they're going to look to the side of the defensive lapses that he has, because he might be one of the only guys that is actually going to produce this year if they let him go. So I'm all for him staying, truly.
Okay, so let me ask you this, guys. Expectations were quite high for Cole Caulfield at the beginning of the year. Some people were 40 goals, this, Calder Trophy, this.
Trevor Zegras.
Trevor Zegras.
So the expectations for this year are obviously lowered. But have your expectations for him as a player overall dropped at all, seeing this small sample size, 20 extra games that you didn't get to see? Well, that, you know, as opposed to last year, you saw 20 games. Well, not even 20 games, I guess, because he was back in Laval. But in that small sample that you have here, has your expectations changed for his career path? Or do you still think he's going to be the exact player you thought he was coming into the year?
I didn't have as high expectations as everybody is saying, as, hey, you could shoot like Ovechkin and play like a certain other players. I never had that. For me, it was more, Let's see what he can do. I mean, there are some people that have said, hey, he's Camilleri with better skating. You know, I said no. I mean, I think I could see the parallels in terms of the shots. The difference is that Camilleri back then used to have to get set up all the time. Caulfield could kind of make his own opportunities. So I didn't have the expectations that some people had. And I wasn't ready to say, hey, he's the best thing since sliced bread. But I'm looking at his... I look at it more as, is he going to be more of a Hoffman type, or is he going to be more of a DeBrincat type? Mm-hmm. That's where I put him in that, in those categories of players, which, don't get me wrong, both are NHLers, both are fantastic producers in their own right. But to say that you put him the way some certain people are talking and treating Cole Caulfield, like he was going to come in and almost be a franchise player, guys, yes, he dropped down the draft. We're very fortunate to have gotten him. We got him ahead of certain players that were drafted instead of him, but I don't have him. I never had him penned in as a draft.
Cole Caulfield is going to be a 40-goal scorer in the NHL. Whether it's for the Canadiens or not is the biggest question.
Wow.
It's money in the bank. This is a Hobie Baker winner, whatever the hell the
trophy
is.
I'm going to take your word when you don't even know the award.
Listen, whatever. The point is, he's the best college player in the country. They gave him the award. This guy has all the accolades. He's got all the skills. He can do it. Guaranteed.
Yeah, but Matt, sometimes that doesn't translate to the NHL.
Vito, we're going to clip this, okay? And we're going to keep this for 20 years.
Please.
And we're
going to keep it. Keep it. And every time this kid comes out with a 40-goal season, I'm going to send it to each one of you, and I'm going to laugh the entire time I do it. The only reason why he will not produce 40 goals is if the team that he's on doesn't utilize him correctly. It is the only reason. The teams that he played for when he was in college and everything knew what they had.
That's a big safety net you're placing for yourself. If the team doesn't utilize him correctly...
Well, he can't be expected to score 40 goals if he's going to be literally handcuffed. And they're going to say, Cole, listen, man, we know you like the slot, but we're going to put you on the bumper on the power play. And, oh, Cole, listen, we know you like to take the shots, but maybe you should pass and worry about defensive assignments more. No, if you're going to play him stupidly, then of course he's not going to produce. But if they open their damn eyes and they go back to the tape and they watch how this kid plays and they make lines and they design them correctly to put him in the best possible position to score goals, he will score
then
goals.
Forget the 40 goals. What is your expectation? If you had to give him a comparable that you hope that this is what he's going to be. I'm putting you on the spot, and you have to think of a lot of players.
Well, it's funny. Okay, and you mentioned the guy. I don't know why. If you got an Alex DeBrincat out of him, you're upset?
Absolutely not.
So he's of the mold, the size, the goal-scoring finesse of an Alex DeBrincat. I mean, could I go and say, because again, you got to go with smaller, diminutive size players because it's only fair. You can't say the kid is going to score X amount of goals. He's going to go around like an Ovechkin and knock people over. That's not his game. But can he be a Marty St. Louis type? Can he be something like that? That's something that I would really like for him to be. I mean, that's what I'm expecting. I'm expecting somebody who can get out there, get into the play, make the offensive push, and bury it when he gets set up properly. But the team currently is not doing that. So I can completely understand why some people are looking at him and saying, maybe my expectations of him were a little high. Frankly, I don't think those are misguided expectations. I think the team is just screwing up. That's my opinion.
Man, I love it. This is why I asked these questions, for such great answers like that. That is
flip it.
I like it. First
guaranteed 40 goals.
First Vito gives an absurd Brendan Gallagher 30 goal season reference. Now we get the guarantee.
Hey, I said flirting. I didn't give no guarantees. I said
Whatever. And then Matt with the 40 goal. He said the guarantee.
Guarantee.
I'm going to frame it and I'm going to send it to your house and you're going to put it right in the wall in the back.
I'm telling you, boys, let the kid be who he is. Let him play his game. The goals will come.
I love it. I love the confidence. I love the boldness. And if that happens, I will buy you a very good meal with some very good
alcohol involved. Excellent. I look forward to it.
All right.
I already taste it.
Yeah, it looks like you're going to be heading to Pittsinville, my friend.
That's fine too.
All right, let's get back to business here. Well, that was very good, Matt. I enjoyed that. Vito, can you play the clip? You have a clip ready? You have it in the bank?
And I have a really good relationship. We communicate daily, and I take this organization at heart. I've been here 9+ years, so media fans have my word. I will never do anything to save my job or to look good. I might be back. I might not be back. Who knows? But my mindset's not changing that way.
All right, so that was Mark Bergevin speaking to my boy Mitchie Gallo and Dan Robertson on the weekend. I mean, obviously over the phone, he's in COVID protocols. No one, no worries about that. But I thought it was very interesting. I thought it was a very telling conversation. And there was something in that sentence that kind of struck me when he said, "You have my word that I will not do anything to hurt this organization for any reason." And that's not something that I would say if I'm here next year. That's not something I would say if in my mind I'm staying as a general manager of the Montreal Canadiens. That's a line to me that sounds like he's on the way out. He knows people are concerned that he's going to screw up the team. He promises he's not. I just wanted to get your thoughts on it because I thought it was extremely, extremely telling. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe eventually, you know, he'll get re-signed or whatnot. But to me, it really, really struck me as an odd thing to say.
I think I have to agree with you. I think he's on the way out. I think it's a conversation he likely already had with Molson. I think they both have an understanding that he'll likely finish out the season, give the Canadiens the appropriate time to find a proper replacement. Maybe they do a full upper management cleanup. Who knows? But I think you're absolutely right. I think the language there is coming from somebody who wants the people to be reassured and say, "Listen, I'm from here. I understand what it is. This has been my life for almost a decade. You know, I wouldn't purposely shaft the team. I wouldn't mortgage the future to try to save my job." These are good things that he's saying. And I believe that he means these things. I don't see him going to go out there and try to make a quick fix and trade prospects or trade picks to try to do something. That period has already passed, right? Like it would have happened already, and it would have been very obvious that he's doing something just to do something. And he said that, I think, in another part of the interview. He said something like he wasn't going to mortgage the future for a fix now. He believes in this team. He knows they're underperforming. He knows that the coach needs to get more out of them, but this is the team, right? He's going to ride and die with this team. So yes, I think this is a guy who is now a lame duck. And it's unfortunate, and it would have been nicer for him to have gone out a little bit better. But at the end of the day, I can't possibly see Mark Bergevin doing anything to purposely, that's ridiculous, hurt the team. And I honestly think he'll be more apprehensive about doing anything because he knows that whatever he does, it'll be looked at as one of his last moves and he'll be judged on it. So I think we should probably gear up to see very few things happening right up until, you know, maybe the trade deadline, and unless it's something the team magically turns this around, he does something there. But on the course that they are currently heading, I would say you're going to see very few things happening from now until the end of the year. And then likely he'll be gone.
And to be clear, it's not what he said that's shocking. It's that he said it. You know, I understand, like, obviously I don't ever think that he was going to hurt the team or make a stupid move or stuff like that. What he said was very honorable, and I think it was very, but I'm just surprised that he actually said it. And I'm surprised that he said it so casually and so into the conversation. I think it just means that he's checked out in terms of, you know, he's moving on at the end of the season. That was my interpretation.
Yeah,
Vito?
I agree.
The way I see it is that if there was a real concern that he would mess up the team, Jeff Molson would keep him there. That's one. So he's reassuring everybody that, hey, I'm not going to mess up the team. But there's also a Mark Bergevin thing there. He's got a legacy with the Montreal Canadiens. He was a general manager for almost 10 years. It's not only what he did during the 10 years, but he leaves a legacy behind. He doesn't want to leave a team in shambles and say that he's the reason why that team was left in shambles, right? So yes, they are up against the cap. There are certain things that, you know, that certain players that they have that you say, okay, those contracts are a little steep. But which team doesn't have a contract like that? Every team's got some kind of contract that's heavy to carry right now. And I'm not going to go through the players on Montreal that we may or may not think have a heavy contract and that have a good or bad contract. Like, I don't want to go through that because we're all going to have different opinions on them. But I think Marc Bergevin, he's going to finish off the year. He's still going to do certain things. He might still do certain, but it's all going to be under the eyes of Jeff Molson. I mean, it's always been kind of under the eyes of Jeff Molson. Marc Bergevin has had the keys to do whatever he wants, but anytime it was something big, it was always rumors that Jeff was around there, you know, like with the PK Subban signing, the Carey Price signing, the so on, right? And so I think that's what it's gonna come down to with Marc Bergevin. I still think there's a chance, not a big one, there's this chance that in some capacity he might even still remain with the Montreal Canadiens. I just don't think he'll be the general manager anymore. I know we've discussed in our previous episode that, hey,
Orwin asked,
can he be the president of hockey ops and he's got a general manager? In an ideal situation, I think that would be great. It's all a question of who the general manager is. You know, I don't see him meshing well with somebody like Patrick Roy, but hey, if we talk about Martin Madden Jr., maybe he'll be okay with that. Who knows? It would be a good to have a good set of eyes, another set of eyes on that. So I would say that's why Marc Bergevin is saying, because even today he said, I may be back, I may not be back. We don't know, only the future will tell, but whatever it is, I'm here today and I'm doing my job. Clearly, Jeff still trusts him to do that job, even if it means that he's gone at the end of the year. Because if he didn't, he'd be gone.
It is still crazy, though. Quickly, it is still crazy.
No.
Regardless what happens, the fact that you got a general manager with no actual future inked right now that is in charge of your team with the current situation that this team's in, where coming up to the trade deadline, you're going to have to do something. Either go rebuild, unload your big tickets and try to get maximum returns, or something. Like, do you keep them? Do you keep them? Like, the core. It's just crazy that this hasn't been addressed.
Well,
just,
and that's the reason why a lot of people
by Molson and the organization.
And that's the reason why people believe that he's more likely to be gone than likely to stay. Because if he was going to stay, he would have been extended already. But I will say this. If we get to the trade deadline and Montreal is in full rebuild mode and they've come to terms with it, Marc Bergevin has been known to really maximize or get the most out of his trades.
Yeah, but look at what he's going to have against him. I have a feeling that other general managers are going to play the fact that he won't be the guy that's there the following year. There's going to be an angle there to
but
use against
him. It's still his reputation.
Him.
He's not going to just burn and destroy his reputation.
He won't
on
burn,
all fronts.
But
already
but,
he's got a reputation. Already he's got a reputation that, you know, he gives bad contracts during free agency. But he's got a good reputation with saying, hey, he's a good negotiator and he can make some trades and he usually wins most of his trades.
Yeah,
so
but then
let
I
him maintain,
on the other side
let
of the
him
table,
maintain
I
one of his.
Not even going to be your team next year, Mark. Come on, why do you want a first and a second? Take a first and a fourth, we'll get it done. Let the next guy have the headache. You know what I mean? Like, people are going to use that angle. It's
they
crazy.
They can use it. They can use it. But then again, that goes back to what I said. If they use it and all of a sudden a player that should have got... Here, Sherratt as an example. In a recent episode, we mentioned, hey, could Sherratt get a... We asked if Sherratt could get a first-round pick. It got brought up during the week that they do believe that he can attract a
absolutely
late first-round pick. Right, yep. So if he can attract a late first round pick, and all of a sudden Bergevin trades him for a third round,
no, that would never happen. I'm just saying it's the little things, the first and a second of the same draft year versus the first and a third of the following draft year. So, like, it's these little things that I can see a guy who knows he's on borrowed time and he's on his way out. If he wants to move something because it's like part of his mandate to try to help the team and they're going to rebuild and whatever, I can see a guy doing that potentially. It's just it's just an awkward thing to have present when it shouldn't be there. This should be a thing that we have to talk about. Either sign him or get somebody else there. This should have been addressed immediately. It's just crazy to me.
I would love to be a fly on the wall, whether it's at Jeff Molson's house, whether it's in the office, to say why we're not extending you this year. Or why is there no extension? Or are they just, you know, they're playing a game of chicken and, you know, in terms of money? Like, who knows?
If they're so close, if they're so tight, if they're foxhole buddies, why is this not done? How
unless,
can it be about
unless,
money, term, and stuff? It just doesn't make sense. It's Mark's
Jeff
desire.
Jeff Molson could be conflicted. Is it time for us to do the pull a New York Rangers and rebuild? Or is it time for us to, you know, hey, Mark, we're going to sign you to another? We don't know.
I brought him to the Stanley Cup.
I don't think it's even that. I think... In my mind, okay, the only thing, maybe money, but I don't know if that's so important right now. I mean, I think Molson will give Bergevin what he's worth and what he needs. I don't think that's maybe this the term. But for me, I think that Jeff Molson probably wants to open a door to say, hey, we might hire a president of hockey operations. We might take a bit of a workload off your hands. And Marc Bergevin says, I want absolute control of this team for whatever my next term is going to be.
That's a fair
and point. And I think that could be an issue. I think Marc Bergevin doesn't want somebody else to come in. And I'm just saying this with no insider knowledge or anything. I'm literally just looking at it from my point of view. I think that that might be
okay.
The point.
Then would you like it if he did become the president of hockey ops and there was another general manager? Would you like it? Mark Bergevin is still there.
It depends what the roles are. It depends who's going to be making the decisions, who's going to be making the moves. It really does. It depends who has the actual power. That's what defends.
I'll say this.
If Mark Bergevin moves to president of hockey operations and they hire a lame duck general manager just for the sake of change, I don't want that. No. I don't think Mark Bergevin has the ability to make a team, to build a team.
I would say that I would like Mark Bergevin to be the president of hockey ops as long as it's under the notion of what you just said, that in the end it falls that the general manager could do whatever he wants. The president of hockey ops is going to be there to say, hey, you know, I don't think you should do that specific move, or just do what a president of hockey ops does. I'd be okay with that. I said it in the previous episode, the real change in my opinion, the person that has to go because he's been there for 17, 18 years, is Timmins. He's got to go. And we're not going to go back on this, but that's the only real change. And if you want to say Ducharme too, but we know that's not going to happen. It would be Timmins. It needs to change there. On that front, Montreal needs a new look.
There's a hot debate on that on Twitter these days. Day in and day out, a few people going at it on Twitter.
I see it. It makes for good reading.
It does. It does. It really does. It's interesting because people are doing their homework on both sides, and you see points that you don't really, you know. So, I mean, maybe we should make a Trevor Timmins-centric episode one day.
He should have been fired after the first draft.
Wow. That is a bold statement to be thrown around all left
2003,
and right.
Best draft in NHL history, and you go take Kostitsyn. Are you serious?
You never truly know what you're going to get. You can't fault him at the time, just like you couldn't fault a bunch of other guys who took the number one overalls and they end up being bust, the Yakupovs and the whatever.
Were too many other players that he could have landed on rather than going for Kostitsyn, even after fully knowing that he was on medication for epilepsy and so many. Anyways, that's a whole other thing. Kostitsyn, he could have had Getzlaf. He could have had Carter, there's so many players. He chose Kostitsyn. Fired.
We're going to do a Trevor Timmins-centric episode, okay?
We're going to take a deep dive into it.
Okay, yeah. Vito, you can have a board behind you and you can go crazy and point to all sorts of things.
I'm going
to
use the old school school pointers popping up. See this right here?
You can do your presentation then. Matt, just want to clear something up. How many goals did you guarantee Cole Caulfield?
40.
Okay. I just want to write that down. Sorry, I wasn't
unapologetic. Sure. I'll say it for as long as anybody wants to hear it. 40.
I love it.
Book it.
All right. I want to wrap this up. I just want to ask one last question. At the beginning, I've been saying this since the beginning of the year on social media, on TSN, even on here. I believe that the Canadiens are too good of a team to tank. I don't think that they're good enough to finish in the bottom 3, 5, maybe probably not even the bottom 10 of the league. We saw a good game on Saturday. We saw some good Edmonton skating. We saw maybe Carey Price might be coming back. What do you guys think? Have you guys' views changed? What do you think? Is this a team that can finish in, you know,
You know what? I will say this. We did say that if Mark Bergevin leaves, he doesn't want, he wants to save his reputation. And if they don't finish in the bottom 10 and they lose that first round pick for the upcoming draft,
they're not going to lose.
That's going to be a stain. No. They are losing a top.
They're losing a pick. They'll have one.
Losing the best one.
They're losing the best one. Yeah.
Okay. So if they're not in that bottom 10, people are going to remember this pick because if it's in Montreal, this draft, they're going to remember it. And they're going to remember it above everything else that he's done.
Yeah, but if it's a rebuild, they have the opportunity to maybe trade up and stuff. I honestly, it's regrettable. But yeah, the team is too good to tank.
All right.
They are too good to tank, but there's still something not right. They're not gelling as a team. So they have on paper, you look at them, you say, okay, there's too many players here that can score goals and have some success. But if they're not playing as a team and they're playing all as individuals, then they're going to be bad. And they're going to continue to be as bad as they've been showing.
And you got Edmondson coming back. You got Price is probably going to come back.
We don't know about Price.
Well, we don't.
He hasn't skated
in
over a week now.
I understand, but he's going to the gym and he's working on his knee. And like Bergevin said, he believes, or Ducharme said he believes that he'll be back before the holidays. they don't know. They won't guarantee
Matt,
it.
I'm going to the gym and I'm trying to get in shape again. Doesn't mean I could go back on the ice.
Don't you dare compare yourself to Carey Price.
You may have his jersey in the back of you there, God. Buddy. But,
oh, my God. I'm going to pretend I didn't hear that. The point is, yes, on paper, this team is too good to be a bottom 10 team. They are. They are not Arizona. They're not an Ottawa. They're not this year's version of Chicago that can't seem to get it done either. They're not bad teams. They just are playing like one of those teams. And if for some reason they can, and again, I use the word beginning, regrettable, because I would love to see them get a top five pick, rebuild this bad boy, start from scratch, work with your new young core, and go forward. I'm on board with that. I would hate to see this team scrape towards a playoff spot, then towards the end get nowhere close to it, finish somewhere like 18th or 17th or something. You lose your top pick. You got to take whatever Carolina's going to have now, which the way they're playing looks like it's going to be maybe like the 29th or 30th pick of the first round. It just would be a damn shame. And it's unfortunate. It's a weird thing. Yeah, I don't know if disaster, but it would be bad.
If they end up with the 29th or 30th pick,
well, they're going to trade to move up. I would bet my as nobody I'm as confident as the nobody, 40 Matt, as the 40 goals for Cole Matt, Caulfield. I'm as confident as I would say
does
they would move
favors
up.
Favors for other teams,
it's but not favored. Happen. They'll you give.
Flip, you could also flip some players at the deadline.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but you're not going to get a
no. You package that. You
get multiple firsts and package and get a higher first. Oh, Dave understands. You obviously need a bit of time to catch up.
No, I get it. I get it. I just would rather do what you're talking about while having in my possession a top 10 pick.
Well, yeah.
I don't disagree, but I'm just saying the way that Dave asked the question,
they're
telling you.
They're not making the playoffs. They're not making it.
Well, they're not a bottom 10 team. Not on paper.
No.
Then you make sure you find a way to put yourself in a position to be, I'm not saying tank, but make sure you find a way to be a bottom 10 team. Certain players are going to have should have to move. If you get by the time the Olympics come around, provided the NHL is still going to send them, then and you see that, hey, there is no chance, make that a part of your trade deadline. Because they're saying that this year there's going to be two trade deadlines. There's going to be the actual break. One, and there's going to be the one from the break.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's it, guys. Great episode. I appreciate you guys taking the time. I
appreciate
like
you, Dave.
I appreciate your bold predictions and your bold, not even predictions, just a statement and guarantees.
Not a prediction. It's a fact.
Vito works as hard in the gym as Carey Price. I mean, it's all with revelations.
Whoa. I never said I work as hard. All I was trying to say is I want to get in shape too. Doesn't mean I'm going to be on the ice tomorrow.
All right. Washington up next. Quick, like five-word predictions for the game against Washington. Alex Ovechkin on Wednesday.
Three goals. Ovechkin scores 2 goals.
Nice. What did someone say? 3 goals? What?
Yeah. Ovi's gonna get a hat trick against Montreal. He's gonna if he's facing Montembeau, it's 3 goals. If he faces Allen, 2 goals.
Okay, I like
Allen's first game back. He's rusty or Montembeau. I mean, yeah, he gonna light the lamp.
I like it. Thank you all for listening. Don't forget to rate, like, subscribe. Do what you got to do, and we'll see you next time on the Get Pucked podcast.
Bye, guys.
Thank you. Get pucked.